Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran, and I am on the Camino. Day two. Yeah, let's go. Day one crushed me. Dang, it crushed me. Well, you're going to get to hear the front end of this. The reflection that you're going to hear today and tomorrow is my on-the-spot reflection the night before I started the Camino, which was yesterday. So today's day two. And it was a kind of a neat opportunity to share in a fuller way now that I'm on the spot in place. And so that's today and tomorrow's program. And I have more reflections coming. So I think that we're going to have fewer recordings of my Holy Spirit series than I thought. But there you go. All right.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out. DrTomCurran.com, Dr. Tom Curran.
Okay, welcome to the program. Before we dive into the reflection, I'm going to start us off with a prayer. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Lord God, I thank you that we are pilgrims, all of us in our own way, etched in the core of our being. And Lord, I ask that you would give us the grace of recognizing the truth that you have more for us than we imagine, and that you invite us to go deeper into trusting in you than we ever thought possible. So let us ask for grace for those who listen, that they would be encouraged and blessed. And I make this prayer in Jesus' holy name. Amen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Just a little warning. I share pretty honestly, not that I make stuff up before, but I'm very open and kind of transparent about my situation in relationship to the Camino. And so I hope that it's a blessing to you and it gets you thinking for your own life about what God might be asking you to do. All right, enjoy it.
What in the world am I doing? Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and I am in southern France, exactly in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. It is the launching point of the Camino Francés, the traditional Camino of Santiago de Compostela. It's about a 500-mile walk across northern Spain. And I am going to be on this journey of the Camino for 34 days. That's the plan. We'll see. It's a 34-stage journey. And the total time I'm going to be away from home is 40 days. And it has dawned on me, what in the world am I doing? It's a kind of an interesting question that friends of mine and family members, including my own family, like, what, Dad, honey, Tom, depending on, you can figure out who they are in relationships. What are you doing? Why would you do this is a big question. I just arrived here earlier today, and I've had a chance to talk to a couple of people who are also starting the Camino tomorrow. They're coming in on the train with me, or happen to sit at the next table in the restaurant. And that tends to be the default question. Like, why are you doing this? So I'm going to answer that question, because it's not an easy question for me to answer on first blush. And I've got a bunch of notes I'm going to be reading from. So if you see me looking down, I journaled today the answer to that question. And I'm going to be walking you through that in this sharing that I do. And I'll eventually give you four reasons why I'm walking the Camino. But before I do that, I want to tell you why I'm not walking the Camino, or not the reason why. I'm walking the Camino. And these are reasons that are often encountered and heard from folks who do it. So first of all, it's not on my bucket list. In fact, I don't even have a bucket list. And if I did, I don't think it would be on it. Or if it was on it, it would be really low. And it would just be because, I don't know, it's kind of a cool thing maybe. I've never brought it up in the past. Like, oh, I really want to do that. When I hear other people talking about like, oh, I'd really like to do that, then I'm like, yeah, that sounds, I can see that. But it wasn't a big deal for me. So, and by the way, I'm going to give you 7 reasons why I'm not walking the Camino, and then 4 obstacles that I would face even if I ever did want to walk the Camino. So let's start with the 7 reasons. So that's the first one. It's not on my bucket list. So that's not why I'm walking. The second is, it's not that I want to experience this aspect of Catholic Church history and life, right? Like a lot of people want to go to the Holy Land or go to Rome or go to pilgrimage sites, right? Like Fatima or Lourdes or Assisi for St. Francis, things like that. I'm not doing this because I'm a student of Catholic history and I want to enter into a journey that millions of pilgrims have made over the centuries. So that's not why I'm doing it. The third is, it's not that I would like to, but I'm held back from doing it because it's not practical and I'm too busy. So that's not why I'm doing it as well. I'm not retired. I am not an empty nester. I still have 3 kids at home and my other 6 kids, I got 9 kids between 12 and 24. They were all home up until a week ago. And that's one of the reasons I'm actually here right now, but we'll get to that. So I'm not an empty nester. I don't have wanderlust. It's not that I've been to so many other places and have climbed Mount Everest and done sort of wild adventurous travels. And so this is like the next one that I need to add to that list. That's not me either. I'm not in search of an experience. People today are like, buying experiences, right? Even more than they're buying things, they're buying experiences. That's not what I'm doing here either. Sixth, I am not on a quest for meaning or purpose or spiritual enlightenment. That's not why I'm here either. Though I appreciate those things and I want to say I want to go deeper into those things and that'll actually show up in as one of my 4 reasons. But I'm not searching for meaning, purpose, or enlightenment. And lastly, I'm not at an inflection point in my life, meaning that there's some kind of radical change that's happened and like retirement, like 2 people I've talked to today. One was, I just retired. I was a teacher, school teacher for 20 years, finished my second career. And now I have this gap and I want to sort of figure out what's the next stage. And so I'm doing the Camino. And another person was, my youngest child just went off to college. I'm now an empty nester and I'm here to clear my head and focus more on my own self and my own personal journey. And I want to figure out what's next. That's not me. I'm not just trying to clear my head. However, with all of that said, those 7 reasons, those are things that would be, I think, acceptable. And obviously a lot of people choose to do a Camino because of that. Not my reasons. Okay. There are also obstacles that would get in the way, even if I did want to do the Camino, and like if it was on the bucket list and I was at an inflection point and I did want to be able to do it. Well, the first is I've got a big family and I still have 3 kids at home that are in school. And being away for 40 days, that's really kind of beginning to end. When you put arrival, get established, do it, finish off, get back. It's about a 40-day journey. By the way, that's a kind of a cool number, right? If you're a person of faith, there's something about an exodus that is 40 days long, right? That 40, a long time in scriptures, is a very meaningful time of transformation, going from slavery to the promised land, being called, being on mission, right? So those would be all examples of 40 days. But for me to be away from Carrie and my kids for 40 days and my family, that's not me. That's not built into me. I don't do that. It's also just not realistic with the amount of just operational stuff that we have around the house that's going on in our day-to-day lives. Back in the early 2000s, when Carrie and I first got married in 94, then we were blessed with children in 99, and then our family started growing 2001, 2003. In the early years of our marriage, I would speak at conferences around the country a couple times a month, and locally quite a bit in the evenings. And that was just a part of our life with me doing church work. And when our third child came, my third child had some health challenges. I made a decision to stop traveling nationally. I did not want to build a church ministry, an apostolate, on the back of my family by like going and being away for a whole weekend at a conference. And I think I was pretty extreme too, in how I would limit my time away. The funniest example is I was asked to speak at a conference in central Ohio on a Saturday morning. So the conference was Friday night through like the end of Saturday. And they had me on the schedule. I said, can you put me on the schedule Saturday morning? I'll give two talks on Saturday morning. And what I ended up doing was I booked a ticket to take a red eye from the West Coast from Seattle. I flew into the nearest big city, rented a car, drove a couple of hours, got out of the car, walked into the event. Within 5 or 10 minutes, I was up on the stage. I gave two talks. When my second talk was done, I came off of the stage, went out the door, got back in my car, drove back to the airport. I was on a plane, and I was back home within 24 hours. And that was from Seattle to Central Ohio. And I served that conference by giving the two talks. That's kind of extreme. My typical experience when I would go to these like weekend events is that the speaker would arrive maybe even a day before to kind of get themselves adjusted to the environment and time change, and they'd be around or even the whole day of the conference and on Friday, and they'd speak, and then they'd be around all day Saturday, and maybe they'd speak in the afternoon, and then they'd be around Sunday morning for the final event, and then they'd fly back Friday after Sunday afternoon. I just could not do that. I internally would not do that, where I just felt like it was more about me than it was about my family. And I think they, to be fair, these speakers would have said, hey, you know, this is really about me being present to the conference and really wanting to respect them and the fact that they were bringing me out and paying for me to be there and paying to give these talks, that I really wanted to be fully present. I respect that, but that was not me. So with that as my approach to my family and my life, I could never imagine being away for 40 days. And I think I, you know, looked and I'm like, I don't think I've been away for, since we've had kids, 4 days. Not to mention 40. So the second is, and even when I'd be away, like I had a contract doing consulting work, and I was away for a day, like once or twice a week during the day. And I would be calling home a couple of times during the day. Hey, how's everything going? And checking in. Like, that's my sensitivity to being present to my family and to Carrie. Okay, the second reason is work. So not just the idea of being away that long from my family, it would be just a big obstacle to doing the Camino. The second is work. So I do two kinds of work, neither of which offer 9-to-5 typical opportunities. Not that it's impossible, it's just that it's, again, not how I'm built, and that's ministry work and real estate work. And so in my ministry work, I do this radio program. It's Monday to Friday. And oftentimes, I'm also fitting in interviews and I'm giving talks, things like that. Not as much of that. So that ministry work and then real estate work. And real estate work, a lot of that has a mission component, because I'm helping a lot of people move who are moving for reasons of faith. And so that's a pretty intensive work. And what it is not 9-to-5. So mornings, evenings, weekends. That has been how I've lived my life. On the ministry side, in earlier parts of my life, when our kids were younger, I would be out regularly, a couple times a week giving talks. And again, weekends doing events. And then with the radio program, when I would be recording programs, that would even customarily happen in the evenings. So that's been my sort of work-life, not balance, work-life out of balance. I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that it's healthy. It's just how I've actually lived. So that would be a second reason why the idea of going on the Camino just would not fit. The third is finances. So I am not wealthy enough to retire. I need to work in order to make money this month to pay the bills this month. And if you follow, like, most of my income comes not from ministry, but from real estate. Well, if you're not present and you're not actively serving clients, then guess what happens? These clients are not buying or selling a house, and you're not helping with the buying or selling a house in the transaction. You get paid when the transaction closes. And that's when the check comes in. And so that the idea of me being away for 40 days carries, like, how are we going to pay the bills? And not just that, but what about momentum? Wouldn't that be kind of catastrophic for momentum if you're not just going to be away those 40 days, but then the time before that in preparing for this is also going to diminish your availability to serve people? How's that even going to be possible? And then just there's a lot of moving parts in our lives. Carrie and I do a lot of dividing and conquering. And so there are, like, rental properties that we have to take care of. And that's a lot of additional work as well. So that'd be a third obstacle to me being where I am today, doing the Camino.
Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that as a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
The fourth obstacle is I'm not in the physical condition to walk 500 miles in 34 days across not the easiest environment. So it's 15 miles a day average, and doing it in 34 stages. I'm 59 years old, and I am not in shape. I'm going to give good reasons why I'm not in shape, right? I think the principal one was a couple of years ago. I had a pretty significant concussion, and my attempts to work out would resurface the impacts, and so it would be difficult for me to be able to find a way to exercise. Do you see how I just gave myself a nice little rationalization there? But it's also a fundamental limitation where I could do certain kinds of exercise, but not in a way that would cause my head to move around quickly. Otherwise, the concussion impacts would increase, and that would just really
slow me down and knock me back. And that's my nice little rationalization to say that I wasn't eating healthy. And if my lifestyle is so busy that I'm not going to be able to focus on eating healthy and well, well, then I'm going to be physically out of shape. All right, so concussion impacted, overweight, not working out, not eating healthy. Let's just say that my kids were doubting dad. Can you really do this? I mean, I was a little taken aback that they thought that I was that, let's call it unhealthy or not physically fit enough to be able to do it. And so those are my four obstacles. Okay, so there you go. I've got seven non-motivations for being here, and I've got four obstacles that would stop me from being here. So the conclusion is what? Tom will not be walking the Camino, or will never be walking the Camino, at least in the foreseeable future. And yet, here I am. Tomorrow, on August the 28th, I start stage one of my Camino. And it's the most physically challenging of the stages, of the 34 stages. So, all right. Actually, I want to tell you why I'm walking, but I've got one more question that was asked to me just a couple of days ago by my 14-year-old daughter, Luciana. We were driving in the car, and this was like a couple of days before I was getting on the plane. And what she said was, Dad, what are you most looking forward to and most excited about on the Camino? What do you have going on? What are you most looking forward to in walking the Camino? And that's an easy question, right? It's not a complicated question. It's not a trick question. I didn't have an answer. What was I most looking forward to or excited about? I wasn't excited about being away from my family. I was not excited about walking 15 miles a day for 33 days straight. I was not excited, honestly, about meeting people. I come to find out that meeting other pilgrims who walk the Camino is like this essential aspect of things. I hadn't studied the Camino. I didn't realize that. Or seeing sights and the beauties of northern Spain, or eating foods that are sort of local and traditional Camino foods. That was not what was exciting me. I was not excited, like most excited about the idea that this was going to get me in shape. Even though I hope it does, that is not, that wasn't in my head as the thing I was most excited about. To be honest, I'm going to give an answer to the question, but I think most of you are going to think it's really strange. And so the answer to the question is that what I was most excited about was that I would have the opportunity to pray extensively and do penance extensively for my family, for my wife and my kids, as part of my call as a husband and father to lead and provide and protect my family. I think that was the biggest thing that I was excited about. And to add into that, I'm gonna use another word, like pray, do penance. I'm gonna say make reparation to repair the damage that sin has caused in my life, in Carrie, my wife's life, in our marriage, and in my kids' lives, in each of them and in all of them. And so in my family, to repair the damage. That would be a big deal for me. I think that's what I was excited about. So, and I think that if I had to refine that even a little bit more, it would be to have a new way to express my commitment to my kids, to pour myself out, to sacrificially give of my life for their spiritual flourishing and well-being. That excited me. And I didn't realize that that was happening until the day before I left for the Camino. My oldest daughter handed me a stack of letters from my kids. My kids had written me letters
that I read when I got here. And they all highlighted the fact that they were like proud of me and were very appreciative and grateful and loving me for the sacrifices that I was making and coming here, that I was doing for them, that they were appreciating that. And that was very meaningful to me. And in fact, it had kind of a positive impact where all of them were saying, I'm going to do something for you spiritually. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to fast for you. I'm going to pray a rosary every day for you. Things like that, that it my commitment to do this evoked from them a step forward in their own spiritual life. And so that was really beautiful. So I would say that would be the thing that I was most excited about when my daughter asked me that question a couple of days ago. Okay, one more time. What in the world am I doing walking the Camino? I gave you the 7 reasons that are very common that are not the reasons why I'm doing it. I gave you the 4 obstacles that would fundamentally hold me back from being able to do it. Well, why am I doing it? And how did it ever appear in my life that this is what I should be doing? Well, let's answer the question. The 4 reasons are, I'll give them to you in kind of bullet point form, and then I'll unpack them. The first is, I am 10xing my life. Just hold on to that phrase. I'm 10xing my life. The second is, the devotion to the Holy Face is why I'm doing this. My devotion to the Holy Face of Jesus, which is behind me right there on the wall. The third is to do what I shared, was the thing I was looking forward to the most, which was to be a pilgrim. This is a pilgrimage for me, and that means I'm walking on a journey, and the means of accomplishing that journey involves acts of prayer, penance, and reparation, you know, acts of self-denial and self-giving that are not comfortable or easy. That's a third, that is a third reason I'm doing this. And then the last is to go out into the deep. Go out into the deep. And that's a scripture passage from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 5. But it's also an element of mystery. And so I'll talk about these 4 reasons. And the first one is really the entry point that ended up being a means of having the Camino appear on my radar screen as something that I was being invited to do. Did you hear that language? That's an important language. I'm going to come back to that at the very end. I was invited to do. Okay, 10xing my life. What the heck is 10xing my life? Well, there is a book by Dr. Ben Hardy and Dan Sullivan called 10x is easier than 2x. 10x is easier than 2x. Now, let me just say, I'm not recommending the book, but there's a fundamental concept in here and an approach to what is typically called strategic planning that is actually like game-changing. And for me, it is the thing that broke open the possibility for this to even emerge as a path forward for me. And so where did this come from and how did it get introduced to me? Well, let's go back to Carrie. So my wife and I, on May the 27th, that was a Memorial Day, we were driving in a car to Boise, Idaho, to be away for 4 days. And the reason we were doing that was because of Carrie. So in a few months from May 27th, actually August the 12th, we would be married, and now we are married 30 years. So we got married 30 years ago. And Carrie pointed out to me that since we had kids, that was in 1999, September, our first child was born. Since then, we hadn't gotten away, just the two of us, for any meaningful length of time. Like to just get away from home, just the two of us, for a few days, just to be able to spend time together, to enjoy each other, to enjoy life, to do something fun, or to reflect on important things that were part of our life. And that's a long time, right? That's almost 25 years. And while being blessed with 9 kids in the first 12 of those 9 years, you can see why it would be, I'm coming up with the rationalization again, right? The reason why it would be not easy for us to just get away for 4 days. But Carrie was feeling the pain, I guess that's a good word, of the limitations that were showing up in our married life and in our parenting, so in our family. And she was looking at the idea of getting away for these 4 days as a chance for us to reflect, as a chance for us to do those things that I had just mentioned. And so she's like, "You never take me away. Let's make it happen." I said, "Great, we're going to do it." And so Memorial Day weekend into the week, Monday through Thursday, we're getting away. And so taking that time and space. So my excuses were just rationalizations, even if I consider them explanations. But the reality was, even though we were and are doing so well in so many ways in our married life, that there were aspects of our life where we weren't flourishing. And quick aside, you know, we are on a journey in this life, and there are always going to be elements in your married life where you're not flourishing. They're just limits. And so being open to the fact that, yeah, we have limits, and that's just what it is. Heaven will remove those limits, but when you're on the way, you have limits. Okay, well, what were the areas in our current reality that needed to be changed? And the efforts that we were doing to change them weren't sufficient. They weren't working. The first was my physical condition. I mentioned the idea that I'm overweight, I'm out of shape, not grossly, but in a way that was off-putting to Carrie. And one of the things that Carrie has a right to or deserves in our married life is that I would respect her and love her enough to want to show up to her in a way that she can esteem and enjoy and celebrate. And that's not easy when I am out of shape. And so that was hurting us. That was hurting our married life and love. And so despite my efforts, when my efforts didn't yield results, then it was easy to just conclude, well, I just have excuses, because if it was that important, then I would be able to improve, I'd do better, and the change would happen. So whatever I could propose as, here's an ideal that I'm going to get at, it wasn't working. And so so that was one area. The second was my work-life balance. And so I have a servant's heart, and so I am not quick to set boundaries on other people's requests from me. And as a result of that, there's a downstream impact, and that impact can principally be felt by my wife and kids if I'm busy serving other people and not attending to them as a priority and putting up the boundaries around the people that, again, in my own rationalization, I can explain or excuse why I wasn't present there or I'm not present in that moment. And so that was something that, again, despite anything that I could say out loud, communicate well, hey, this is a change I'm making, it wasn't happening. The third was regarding our parenting, where Carrie and I would be with 9 kids. It's a lot, right? 5 teenagers. We had 5 kids in 6 kids in post high school, 6 in college, 5 in college and 1 in beauty school this past year, and 3 in private school. Carrie's like, I need a plan. I need a plan. What are we doing to financially support them, but also help them be accountable to embrace and to recognize the cost that they're taking on, not just us. And then, but the also the spiritual formation and the total human formation of our kids, helping them to grow and flourish when there's so much at stake at these different times of their lives. And each of them are in these critical moments, right? So whether it's the sixth grader, the eighth grader, the 10th grader, or the three college sophomores, the college senior, and then the two that are out of just finishing school and off into their next stage in life. Any one of those could be a full-time job, just trying to attend to them and help them kind of take the next steps well. So Carrie would say, we need a plan. We just need a plan. And that plan kind of runs upstream to our financial plan for our future. And do I really want to be working this intensively for the next 15 years? Or is there some plan that we have that will allow us to slow down and shift? So that was a big third, I guess it's the third and fourth, the parenting, but then also just the finances, like understanding our current reality better, and then what's our budget, what's our plan, how do we set and achieve goals that will allow us to retire in a reasonable time frame. And then the last was the place of technology in our lives. So Carrie and I, we give talks on the parenting in the digital age, and one of the first things that we begin with is kind of a simple but dramatic statement that you are addicted to your smartphone until you prove to me you're not. You just are. You're addicted to getting on social media or listening to podcasts. So whatever it is, there's that sense of energy and anxiety if we don't have that smartphone around us. And so Carrie and I were seeing, and she's again very sensitized to how much time are we spending on screens and how much time are we allowing our kids to spend on screens. And that's with us who are like alert and aware and taking action and setting some boundaries. But there was still that sense of there's a lot of opportunity for us to do better. And are we really just settling for this and wasting? That's it. That's really the key word, wasting our life energy and our time on things that are just not worth it. So that would be a fourth area where getting away, it would give us a chance to talk about all of this. So I think the last reason to get away, besides those areas of not flourishing, is associated with Carrie's visionary capability. Carrie has this beautiful sense of envisioning the future, right? Like where are we headed? What do we really want to do with this stage in our life? Like where do we really want to go and spend our life energy on? And like for instance, she just successfully oversaw, planned, and facilitated a family reunion for her side. And there were like 45 people there, a whole bunch of kids from her family. She did it for her mom, and she also did it for our kids so that they could be meaningfully connected to their cousins and aunts and uncles. Carrie's commitment was, I really want my kids to stay connected to their cousins and their rootedness in the family and in family traditions, that this is that important. And so she just commits tremendous energy to achieving a vision that is embodied with an ideal that's important for her. And so the ideal that she wanted us to go away and reflect on was, where are we headed? She and I together as a couple, you know, coming up on 30 years of marriage, what's the future hold? And, you know, there's no guarantee for even today or tomorrow, but if we want to be prudent, we cast out that vision for the future if God would give it to us and say, we don't want that to be a waste. We want to use it fruitfully. And so the idea was let's step away, let's step apart and go away from the typical environment that would kind of weigh us down and have us stay in the same circle of thinking and conversation. And let's see if we can tackle some of these bigger issues. So And I think Carrie also was feeling very much this idea that, you know, we're on the downward slope of things. You know, I mentioned I'm 59 and she's 54, and she said something. I hadn't heard it before, but it makes so much sense when I heard it. She's like, I have to work out so hard now not to get stronger and more lean and achieve the next level of fitness. I have to work so hard to slow down the loss of my own physical capabilities. Like, wow, that is a striking statement. I hadn't thought of that, that at a certain point, you reach an age where it's not about I'm going to get super fit despite what you see on social media, and I'm going to be this amazing looking specimen at my age. It's no, I have to work out a ton and eat super healthy just to slow down the losses of muscle mass and energy and physical capability. And if you're not careful, the very act of working out to try to improve could lead to injuries that just set you back even further. So all that's the background. That's the background for Carrie and my drive to Boise. And as we're driving away from home, she says, hey, I want you to listen. We have about an 8-hour drive, 6, 7, 8-hour drive. She's like, hey, I want you to listen to this podcast. It was like a life hack podcast. And in this life hack podcast, he was interviewing this Dr. Benjamin Ben Hardy, the co-author of this book, 10X is Easier Than 2X. She says, I just want you to listen to it. I think this might be like a wonderful, like sort of launching pad for us to have interesting and different conversations and maybe find a different way to address some of these pressing issues that I've just shared with you. And the idea was 10X your life, 10X your life. Well, to be really frank and honest, when I first heard her say that, I got a bit defensive. Maybe the word was condescending. A lot of like popular self-help books, even business help books, are filled with platitudes and sort of rehashed ideas, or kind of muddy terms that are like inconsistent or a weak presentation, and I slice and dice them, right? So I'm quick to critique and watch what I can do. I can make that better. Basically, I wasn't very teachable. I did not have a very docile spirit when she put it in. And it was a rough start, to be honest, like the first 15 or 20 minutes of the podcast. I would have her stop the podcast and I would like slice and dice something he said, like, that's not clear. Here's how I'd say it. Oh, that's inconsistent what he just said. And I actually would still stand by a number of those things. I'm not saying that in a way it's condescending or arrogant. It's just there is only a certain level of clarity, only a certain level of consistency and insight that this fellow has. But with that said, I said, you know what, let me, before I frustrate her, let me just stop. Let me set aside my critical spirit and let me be humble and docile enough to receive from this guy and see if in fact this becomes a path to a new level of insight. Okay. And with that happened, I actually was quite surprised and beautifully surprised. I listened for a while. I said, Carrie, this is amazing. This is incredible. I mean, like, my goodness. It's an alternative to, I think I mentioned this before, strategic planning, if you're familiar with that. So my background, I have a PhD in systematic theology, and a lot of what I do is communication. And I would employ that and deploy that those insights in corporate America. And so for the last 25 years, I've been serving CEOs and senior leadership teams and small businesses and then in bigger companies as well. And so I had to perform, I had to be effective or I was gone. And so this is where I had that honed in idea of being slow to just say, oh, wow, this guy's amazing. But the insight that he had was shifting away from this traditional idea of strategic planning, which says, know your current reality, envision a future that's preferable, that's more ideal, identify goals that are associated with the accomplishment of that vision. Identify then in the light of where you're at and where you're striving to get to, where you're committed to go, what's the path to take to get there? And that path will involve utilizing certain assets and overcoming certain obstacles that you have identified as on that path and going to move you forward on that path. And then as you identify assets and obstacles, you then turn that into a plan, and the plan will have certain people doing certain work over a certain amount of time, costing a certain amount of money. And then you break that up into a succession of activities. This leads to this, leads to this, et cetera. And then you put it into action, and someone has to drive the execution on that plan. And as you do that, you begin to evaluate and reflect on, is this working? Do we have to make some kind of course correction? And as things that are unexpected show up and other things that we expected to work didn't, et cetera. Okay, so this strategic planning in a nutshell. Well, his point is that strategic planning is going to fall within a typical framework of a 2x type scenario where, okay, if our current reality is we're doing this much of a good thing, then by the end of this time period, let's say a year, at the end of this next year, we're going to want to be doing as much as twice as well as we're doing right now, twice as many, twice the level of accomplishment. So that would be 2x, two times that level of accomplishment. And that's what some people would call a bag, a big, hairy, audacious goal, right? And when you're setting out to say, here's where we're at, here's where we're going, right? A vision, strategy, plan, and action, execution, and reflection, right? Evaluation, and then you kind of keep going back, you iterate on that. The typical way of accomplishing that is by working smarter and not harder, right? So being more efficient, being more intentional, you know, what to do, what is important and not just what is urgent, identifying those types of things, and working better as a team. And so delegating and learning how to do teamwork and communication, and then supporting, encouraging, and being accountable, and, you know, evaluating and measuring and all right, systems, processes. So all of those things are typical ways of trying to get to that next point. Right. And it's by improving, right? You're just going to be improving, and you're going to get to that next level, even if it's twice as good. Okay. So this guy's point is, what if the way to bring about radical change is not by envisioning a future that's even as big and audacious as twice as good as what you're doing right now? But imagine it being 10 times what your current situation is, 10 times the current reality. And the point here is that once you go to a 10x life, a life that is far beyond anything that you can tie back to your current reality, then all of a sudden, all of the typical ways of achieving what it is you want to do, no longer are going to work. They're not going to get you there. They're not going to be sufficient to get you from where you're at to 10 times that goal, right? So in a business, you're not going to be 10 times as productive by just being working harder, working smarter, working, doing the important instead of the urgent, all those different things. You're never going to get there if you try to envision a 10x goal. And so the natural conclusion is, well, don't do that. There's no reason to do a 10x goal. Well, this is where I part ways with Ben Hardy and his research, which is not only based in like psychological research. I honestly think it's based on a framework for life that is Mormon. That framework of looking at life, which is the best way to envision the future is to create it. So you have this creative capacity. And so he goes into the psychology that I think is associated with that philosophy of life, which is if you can convince your unconscious, your subconscious, that's real, the 10x life is real, then it will become real. So you have to intentionally place in your mind that the 10x reality is the reality I'm living out of. And if I start living in accord with my 10x life, then my life will start to transform into the 10x life, because it's already there in my mind. I've envisioned it, I've created it psychologically, and so it will then be translated into the reality of my present life, and it'll do so in ways that are surprising to me and unexpected, and watch what happens, right? The path will emerge. That's where I part ways, because I got so excited that this actually fits in a Catholic framework, a philosophy of life that says that the reality that is most truly and profoundly yours, your ideal reality, is in one way present, but in a hidden state. And it is your task to remove the things that are hiding that ideal reality from manifesting itself more completely in your life. It's called prolepsis. So a proleptic path of advancing, a proleptic path of growth, is not seeking to improve and gain more skills and grow and advance and being able to do things that you couldn't do before. But rather, it's about unveiling the reality that is already present inside of you, but in a hidden state. And so that's what prolepsis is. And it's actually connected to the idea of growing in holiness. Growing in holiness in our tradition is associated with a Latin term called ablatio. And ablatio means the process of removing. So you grow in holiness, not principally by becoming more holy, by doing more holy things, but rather by removing the things in your life that are hiding the holiness that already exists within you, but in a hidden state. This actually is associated at a more human level with a certain way of seeing sculpting. John Donne, the Anglican priest and poet author, had this famous saying that the sculptor does not make the statue, he removes what hit it. The sculptor does not make the statue, he removes what hit it. This is the story of Michelangelo coming into the workshop of Donatello and seeing this very large block of marble that had been there for, I don't know, like 20 years. And this one particular time when he comes in, he sees the block of marble and has this revelation, this vision. And he says, seeing the block of marble, I saw David. And it was my job to set David free from the marble. So the famous statue of David, it was not, here's a block of marble, let me make something from it, of it. But rather, no, I saw David in it, and there are things that are hiding it from showing up. What if we take that concept of prolepsis, that proleptic approach to life, and let's apply it to this 10x idea? That a 10x life would be envisioning a life that you could live that would more profoundly and completely bring out into the world, bring out into your day-to-day life, the life that you were made for. That God, in creating you, created you to become this saint, to become holy, and to fulfill a God-given mission. So think of that, holiness and mission, who I am and what I'm called to be about, being and doing or acting. And when we look at those foundations for living our life, all of a sudden we can stop and say, okay, the life that I'm living right now, how deeply does it correspond to the ideal manifestation of the life that I'm called to live and to do the things that I was made to do? What if we took that risk? What if we were willing to 10x our life